please help me to welcome Sammy G from Powhatan? No, Powhatan, Virginia, Keystone Group.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sammy Griffin, and I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is September 1st, 1989, and it's through people like you and a sponsor who loved me enough until I could love you. And God, of my own understanding, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink. And for that, I am truly grateful. I have a home group, and I have friends, which is very important for me today. And a lot of them have come up here today with me, and I'm so grateful for that. Really grateful today to have friends. My job up here is to tell y'all what I was like, what happened to me, and what I'm like today. And I'm going to tell you right now that I'm not the same person that I came in with. If you're here, if you're new here, there was a guy that raised his hand. I'm telling you, if anything that I do here, I hope I bring you hope. Because that's what I got when I first got here. I got hope. And I came to you at the end of August, and everything that was good and clean and decent in my life was gone. And then I'll tell you how that all happened. I was born to a nice Jewish family. I was the youngest of six. I was born in 1951. I'll get out all the statistics. Just in case you women were like saying, oh my God, she looks great. But I was born into this family that, you know, I know today is a very loving and caring and kind family. But what happened to me when I was growing up, and I don't know where this came from, but I was born in fear. I was just a real fearful child. And being a fearful child, you never really can be yourself. And I didn't know that until I got here, because fear just ruled my life. I was always afraid of my sisters and brothers. And I was just telling them earlier, my sisters and brothers, I'm 57, 58, 59, 60, and 66, 67. My mother was very busy. And but what happened to me, my sisters and brothers, I always felt different from. And, you know, we hear that a lot, but I always felt not enough. I just felt like I wasn't good enough. And I just, you know, just didn't fit in. And I was just a wound-up little kid. And when I took my first drink at the age of 15, this is what happened to me. You know, it was like a light switch. Just like, you know, it just went on. All that angst that I felt when I was growing up, all that fear that I had, all that, you know, anxiety of not being enough, I became enough. And what happened when I first took that drink, at the same time, you know, I was a fat kid. I was so different from my sisters and brothers. They were tall and thin, and I was fat. And so my mom, did I emphasize that enough? Oh, it's fat. I cried a lot, you know. But, you know, and I was always comparing myself to my sisters and brothers because I wanted what they had. I didn't know what it was, but I wanted it. I wanted it bad. They seemed to have it together. And so at the age of 15, I took that first drink. Also at the age of 15, my mom took me to a diet doctor, and they put me on amphetamines, and delicious. And what happened is I just learned how to drink faster. You know, that's all it did to me. And I loved it. You know, when I first drank, I drank truly for the effect. I really did. Now, I wasn't really sure about what it was that gave it to me. You know, but I know that when I drank, something happened to me. I had an effect that was great because all that inside became good. I could actually look at you and talk to you. It gave me the courage. It gave me a feeling that I was enough. And I love that. I love the effect alcohol gave to me. Now, I drank alcoholically from the very beginning. And since my family didn't do that, that's where all this shame came from. Because they didn't drink like I was drinking, that's for sure. And so what I did is I would drink privately at first and then go out and drink with other people, because I didn't want people to see how much I drank, how I drank, you know, and most of all, eventually, my behavior became really bad. But so that was me from the very beginning. I was just a blooming alcoholic. And I didn't know this. By the time I got to you people 23 years later, you know, I didn't know I was an alcoholic. But my escapades on the way to get here, let me tell you some of the stories that happened to me. You know, I chose alcohol over a lot of things during my time out there, and I willingly gave up a lot, willingly. When I was 21 years old, everybody in my family got married, because that's what you did back then. You know, you were considered an old maid if you weren't married, you know, at the age of 21. So at the age of 23, you know, all my family had been married at that time, you know. I said, oh my God, I've got to get married. And there's for a couple of reasons why I said that. I needed to some stability, because that's what I thought marriage was going to give me. I needed that stability. And, you know, I knew that my mom and my dad and my sisters and brothers would be real happy that I did that, because I needed their approval so bad. I mean, I would have done anything for their approval. So at the age of 23, I picked out this perfect specimen. I picked out a nice Jewish doctor. And see, I thought, I didn't really care who it was, but he just fit. You know, you have this picture of what you think your life should look like. And I did. I had this idea of what my life should look like. You know, I should have a house with a white picket fence, a big house, by the way, with, cars in the garage. And just that's what I pictured, because that's what my sisters and brothers all had. And so on November 9th of 1974, my mom and dad threw me a wedding, and it cost them $20,000 for this wedding. And that morning, my girlfriend picked me up, who was going to be in my wedding, and see, what happened is I got thirsty. And I was a little irritable anyhow, but wasn't too excited about what was going on. But I called her up, and I said, you know, I need a drink. And so I started drinking early that morning, and I wasn't a pretty drunk, just to let you all know. I threw up a lot. So every hour on the hour, I'd be throwing up, you know, being on the side of the road throwing up. And remember, she looked at me and she goes, you know, Sammy, you don't have to do this. And I said, yes, I do. I got to get through this. So I drank a fifth of vodka that day, and I took four Quaaludes. See, all the 60s and 70 people are here. Rock on, sister. So, now, I walked down the aisle, and I would walk down just like I am right now. I was in control, even with all the Quaaludes and the drink. I was right. I was just there. Now, I would have married anybody beside me, but I was okay. So I got married on that day, and I was only married for 3 weeks. I know, a gasp. And so this is what happened. You know, I did this like I did any other day in my life. What I did is I saw someone else go by that I wanted. You know, another guy showed up, you know, that looked good. So what I did with everything is I lied to get out of it. I mean, I lied so much about this guy that I married, and he's a great guy, you know. But that's what I had to do. I needed to come out smelling like a rose, because that's what I always did. I wanted you to be the wrong one. I wanted to be right. So that was just another day and time in my life, you know. And by the time I, you know, finished telling my brothers and sisters and my mom and dad how bad this guy was, they were glad that I got rid of him. And it was all a lie. It was all a lie. So I picked up my pieces, and I was probably with that guy that I left him for like maybe 3 months, which was a long-term relationship for me. But that's what happened. And I went on my merry way. I was brought up in Norfolk, Virginia, and I had moved when I was 18 years old. I had moved up to Washington, D.C., and man, that was a fast lane for me. You know, that's where I really discovered alcohol. I never had any curfews when I was growing up or anything. For God's sakes, I was the youngest of six. They were over that, you know. But I never had any curfews like that, but I felt this newfound freedom, you know, that I'd go to work and I could drink whenever I wanted to drink. And I didn't have to hide because I could go back to my own apartment and drink like I really wanted to drink. I was working in the hospital. I was the only kid in my family who didn't go to college. And that really hurt my family. They thought education was the most important thing. They're all my sisters and brothers today, they're all doctors and lawyers. And my education and what I was nothing. And my whole life, that's all. If you would have asked me what I really wanted to do, and if I, you know, what was my ambition, what I wanted to do, I just wanted to be happy. That's all I wanted to do, is just be happy and just do what I want to do. And that's what I did. I didn't care about you. I didn't care about your feelings. I didn't care about anything. I just wanted to be happy. So, I was working up at NIH at this time. I had worked at Walter Reed and NIH. Doesn't that sound great? Doesn't that sound great? I needed something like that to make me feel good. You know, I had to have a title. I was a histologist, you know, which worked in pathology, which worked in the hospital, and I just loved having a title. You know, my sisters and brothers had one. I needed one. You know, I didn't know alcoholic was going to be my next title. So at the I was 28 years old, and I was working at NIH, and I got stricken with multiple sclerosis. And, boy, I took it hard. I took it hard. And they had put me on disability, and I hated it. I really did. But what I did is I turned to alcohol for my solution, because anything that I couldn't stand what I was feeling. Alcohol took that away from me. And it worked for a long time. A long time. You know, and so I was on disability at this time. And for like a year, a little over a year, I was in a wheelchair. Couldn't walk, and I had lost my eyesight. And I was just, you know, drinking because I didn't care about anything. And, of course, as you can see, that, you know, God has restored me to sanity. And so that started off my geographical cures. And I didn't know that's what they were, but that's what I started doing. I was the type of alcoholic. This was my personality. I had these great personality traits. I would go and live with you and end up just causing trouble. I was the type that just stirred up trouble, you know. It was just in my personality to do that. I would steal from you. I would lie to you. If you had a husband, I would just take it. If you had a girlfriend, I didn't mind doing that either. You know, I was very versatile. But what I did is, but I would always get in trouble. I always found trouble. Whoever I seemed to get up with, and I seemed to get up with some good people at that time, but see, good people didn't put up with me. People just couldn't put up with my behavior. But I would get inside to someone's house, and I would just stir up things. And so eventually, I had to leave. I would just take my plastic bag and leave your house. You know, and I end up with, you know, somebody else, and I was started living. I lived up in Bryn Mawr for a while. I lived up in New York. I lived in Florida a couple of times. I lived in Tennessee. You know, Tennessee, strange. You know, I always say that when I speak. But I was living everywhere. But when I was living in Tennessee, I was living. You know, my dad got sick when I was in Tennessee, and you know, he got sick with asbestos from mesothelioma. And there's so many commercials about that today. It bothers me. But my mom needed help for, you know, one of her kids to come help her. They had a protocol in Houston, Texas at MD Anderson to take my dad to. And so that's what they did. They took my dad down there. And he was sick. He was very young. He was 60 years old. So my mom called up and she needed some help. So I volunteered to be a good daughter. I really wanted to be a good daughter. I wanted to be a good sister. I wanted to be a good human being. I just didn't have the skills to do that. But I volunteered to go down and help my mom. So my mom leaves and comes back to Norfolk. And in that protocol, what they do is you get to live in the same room with the patient. And my father was aphasic at that time. In other words, he couldn't speak. And so I get down to Houston, and I get into the room, and I'm feeling a little irritable and a little restless and discontent. You know, I'm getting a little thirsty. And I go out, and I look at my dad, and I say, "Dad, I'll be right back. I'm going to go out for a while." And so I go out, but I don't come back for 3 days. And I come back to that hospital room, and my dad looks at me, and he goes, you know, with that look, he couldn't speak, and he goes, "What are you doing? Where are you? You're supposed to be here." And, you know, I don't know what to do with that. I just don't know what to do. I'm feeling remorse. I'm feeling guilt. I'm feeling shame. The only thing that I know that's the solution to this problem is that I went out and took another drink. And I got back to his room 2 days later, and that same look. But this time the nurse came up to me and she said, "Sammy, we've got to call your whole family in because your dad's dying." And I'm like, "Oh my God, no one can see the condition my condition's in. Oh my God," because I was a mess. So what happened was, is I was just thinking about me. You know, I don't want anybody to see how I'm looking, how what I'm doing. So I left in the middle of the night. I just took off. And my family comes and my dad dies. And you know, I didn't even get to say goodbye to my dad. You know, alcoholism took that away from me. Because all I was doing was I was selfish and just self-centered. All I could do was think about me, not my dad. Not at all. So after my dad dies, I move down. You know, I go down to Norfolk to his funeral. You know, the whole family's there. And how do I show up? I show up drunk to my dad's funeral. And I remember my sister Louise. Sorry, Louise. My sister Louise, she pulls me over and she grabs me with her long fingernails, and I feel her nails going into me, and she just spits on me, and she goes, "We don't want you here." And, you know, and I'm like, "Oh, whatever, you know, she doesn't know what she's doing." And I stayed, but that's what I was doing to them, you know. And so I stayed because my mom needed some help, because now my mom was alone. And so I volunteered to stay with my mom because I wanted to be that good daughter and I want to be a good sister. And I really want to be a good person. I just don't have the skills. I just don't have it. And see, what all I did with my mom is I just drank her out of her liquor cabinet. And I was gone. I was just doing the same thing to her. And that's what I did. You know, I was at that time trying to play sports because I love sports. Sports was a passion that I had. And see, even alcohol eventually took that away from me too. But I would be up at this bar, Bennigan's, at Military Circle playing Pac-Man because I'm a really good Pac-Man player. You know, I'd be playing Pac-Man all night long and thinking that was more important than being at home helping my mom. You know, I wanted to do that because, see, I would look at my sisters and brothers. They're all reliable. They're responsible. They all have children. They're all married. And see, I just felt so less than. You know, I would look at them and I'd compare myself to them. I'd compare myself to you. You know, and I couldn't just fit the bill. So what I would do was just drink more. Drink more. That was my solution. So I left my mom. I end up in Florida at this time because my oldest sister wanted me to help her out. And I thought that was a great idea because she had the money and I had the time. So I go to Florida. I'm living in Naples, Florida. I mean, what a gorgeous place that was. And what was so good about it is I lived right on a golf course. She bought a brand new condo. How good was my life? All I had to do was just suit up and show up. But every night I was out. Every night I'd come home. Sometimes I'd have to break into my own condo, her condo, because I didn't want to wake her up for her to see the condition my condition was in. I was just so embarrassed and shameful. And so I did the same thing to my sister. I got up in the middle of the night, you know, one day because I was getting caught. I don't know what I was getting caught at. I don't remember, but I was getting caught. I knew I had to leave. So I left in the middle of the night, her also. And that's how I ended up in Richmond, Virginia, which is right next to Powhatan. Carl,
right.
Just Lena. Yeah. So the reason I ended up, you know, I just leave her. I'm driving, and I'm telling you, I am so drunk when I'm driving from Florida to Virginia. And before I get to Richmond, I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, I could go back home to Norfolk where my mom is, because I knew my mom would take me back. I knew it. Or I could go, I have another sister that lives in Richmond, and I could go and live with her. And that's what my car decided to do. And I end up in Richmond, Virginia. My sister owned a bar. She owned a restaurant and bar. And so I learned how to become, my sister wanted to help me, I'm sure she did. But I ended up being a bartender at her restaurant. And I was a good bartender. You know, I don't think I drew a sober breath, you know, for the couple years that I was there. I was there in the early 80s. I don't remember. I have a hard time remembering any of the 80s. I had a lot of, I lived in a blackout. But the problem that this caused me at this time was my sister was a full-blown crystal meth addict, and I was in full-blown alcoholism. And it was a blast that was going to last. And what happened to me, I started doing this other stuff, and I was drinking on a daily basis, and I don't think I slept for 2 years. It was awesome because I was this thin, which I thought I was really cute. I did. I thought I was hot. Of course, I couldn't enjoy it because God knows I couldn't go outside in the sunlight because I was allergic to the light. I mean, it was like the devil. I mean, oh my God, even the fluorescent lights at work were pretty tough for me. But what happened, I started doing a lot of illegal things there, you know, gambling and doing a lot of illegal things at my sister's restaurant. And eventually we lost it. And my sister was violently hating me. Let me put it that way. She was in hate. And I was in la-la land, so, you know, I didn't care. But I had a lot of blackouts. My first blackout was when I was 24 years old. And I remember because I had my niece with me who was 12. And I took my niece with me bar hopping. And I remember it like it was yesterday. It was in Connecticut, and I started drinking at this one bar, and I came to at the last bar that I had mapped out. And I had my niece with me, and I don't remember anything. And what I did with that is what I did with any of my feelings, my emotions, anything. I just tossed it to the side. God knows I couldn't take a look at anything. I didn't want to see the truth about anything. So by the time, you know, I got to my sister's and that blew up, I mean, I was in blackouts most of the time. So I started working at this cafe. Now, you know, like I said, my sister and I, it blew up. So I started working at this college town cafe. And this was during the 80s where the girls wore white powder and they had black hair and the guys had spikes. And I thought to myself, I could fit in this place and probably look pretty good. You know, because at this time I didn't know, I had stopped bathing, you know, regularly, and, you know, I was just a sight. So I started working at this place, and one night, someone's important in here. One night, I got to work, and my boss had called me into his office. What my boss had done, and he had put up cameras because someone had been stealing from him, so he wanted to catch the thief. But what happened? He called me in. It was on a Friday night. I'll never forget this. And it was during the VCR days. And he had take the tape, and he put the tape in the VCR, and he had me on tape stealing from the register. And I denied it was me. Because at that time, and I remember thinking this way a lot, that I was invincible, that I could do anything and no one could see me, and if anybody cared. But I really thought that I would show up to work and just go in the back room because, you know, I couldn't stand the lights or the ballet or any of the arrangements. And I couldn't stand it. So, but he called, you know, he looked right at me when I denied it was me. And he said, "Sammy, you are sick. You need help." And I thought to myself a couple of things. Number one, I'll just take my poker chips and move to another table. You know, I have survival skills. You know, I can do this. And the heck with him, you know. And, you know, in Bill's story, it talks about him, how he had that determination to win. You know, another bottle and oblivion. And that's what I was going to do. And how I left that restaurant, this is what I did. I got in my car, which was in the same condition I was. It was trashed. I had, you know, retread tires on it. I didn't take care of anything. It hadn't seen oil in a long time. That's what the condition my car was in. When I got back to this apartment, which I forgot to mention that when I was put on disability for my MS, that the government was taking care of this apartment, because if I didn't have that, I would have been under the bridge, and that's a fact. But I was never self-supporting through my own contributions. I go back to this apartment that I had that the government was paying for, and I go into that, and it was trashed. See, I was the type, at that point, I had, for years, I hadn't had no friends. Years. Years I was living alone. So this is the condition, my condition was at that time. I had stopped bathing. I had worn this headband. I had this headband that I probably wore for over 30 years. I had different ones, but I always wore a headband because I was a hippie. You know, I had flowers in my hair. They were dead, but they were still there. And I wore this long red sweater that I wore, and it was at the end of August, and it was hot. But I wore this long red sweater. You know, it was down to here, and because at that time I had put a needle up my arm at least 100 times a day. And so I was drinking every single day. So I go into this apartment that was trashed. I didn't throw anything away because I was even embarrassed about the garbage men. They could not see what I was doing. And so I go home, and I didn't drink. All I did was just go to sleep. I woke up the next morning, and something happened to me. Just like the day that something happened to me when I took that first drink, a light switched on inside of me. While I was at that restaurant, you know, working at that bar, I got a typed letter from my family. And in that letter, in the Jewish religion, what they do is they take their sleeve and they rip it, they tear it down, and they kill you off. And my family sat Shiva for me. That's just a tradition what they do. And I was no longer in that family. I was dead, according to my family. And when I read that letter, I can't even begin to tell you what it did to me. It killed me. Killed me. Everything inside of me was dead. You know, God gives us this light. He gives us this light that we live by that's lit up inside of us. And that light that was inside of me was going out. It was going out fast. And what I did with that letter is I threw it away because I couldn't handle it. But it killed me. It killed me. So, you know, I end up going back to that, you know, and something happened to me when I woke up that morning. And I know today it was the hand of God, because I had nothing to do with this. You know, I didn't want to drink. I didn't want to do anything. And I picked up the phone, by the way, that I didn't really have. I had spliced it together with my neighbors, because I have skills. And I called my best friend's sister, whose daughter had gotten help somehow, because I had never really heard of AA or anything. I had seen commercials, you know, of a woman on a diving board, you know, diving into an empty pool. You know, I've seen commercials like that, or you're an egg frying on a rock, this is your brain on drugs, you know. And I had seen things like that, but I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I called her, and she said, "Sammy, don't move, I'll be right there." And I say this every time I speak because I think it's so important. You know, my life was transformed right then and there. God had touched me. Now, I didn't know that, but something, I was different. I was on a different footing. And I am so glad that that girl didn't say, you know, if I'm going to be watching American Idol tonight, I won't be able to pick you up, you know, or I've got to go here or go there. She said, Sammy, I'll be right there. Because, see, that was my window of opportunity. That was it. God had touched me, and he touches all of us. You know, we can ignore it, or we can do something about it. And so she came over, and it's the first time in years I had let someone in my apartment, because I was like a lone wolf. I had no friends, none, for years. No family, nothing. And I was living, one might say, to die, because I was just drinking myself to death. So she picks me up, and she takes me to treatment, and I don't even know where I'm going. I don't even know why I'm going. I was just done. And I said, okay. So she takes me to Tucker Pavilion, which is a hospital in Richmond, and I go to treatment, and I'm in there for 30 days. I get up in treatment, and they told me that I was a late-stage chronic alcoholic. And see, I was happy. I was like, oh, my God, this is great. It's not my fault, you know. I just didn't want anything to be my fault. But see, I didn't know that. You know, and it talks about it in the big book, how in chapter 3, how all of us come in differently, and we do. Some of us know that we're alcoholic. Some of us know. Some of us already have step 1, 2, and 3. I had no idea that alcohol was my problem. See, I thought I was schizophrenic, bipolar. I don't care what you name it. I had all the appearance of any one of those diseases. I did. I had it all. But that's what it looked like. I was picking things out of the air and saving them for later. You know what I mean? I was just out there. And so this is what happened to me. When I'm in treatment, I get introduced to you people, to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, see, I had a counselor who believed in the power of God and believed in the power of AA. And I was very fortunate. They told me there that I want you to look to the left and I want you to look to the right because only one of you are going to make it. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I really feel bad for you. Because I knew that I was the one who was going to make it. I did. Because, see, it wasn't a matter about the alcohol anymore. For some reason, God, I had surrendered. And it wasn't about the drink anymore. It was about me. I was sick of Sammy. I was done. I was 38 years old, which is the same age as Bill Wilson, so it made us like that. We were. But I was done. I mean, and so when I knew that. But here's the kicker. All that God touching me that day, me having that, all that is all well and good, but if I fail to enlarge upon my spiritual life, that would have meant nothing. Because I can't live off what I have yesterday. I can't do it. So I'm in treatment, and I'm so happy to be there. You know, I was one of 30 who was probably happy to be there. I was pretty obnoxious in there, in fact. But they gave me a couple of things that I had to do. They told me that I had to get a sponsor. They all told me I had to trust God, clean house, you know, and all those things were way over my head. I'm going to let y'all know, this was all a new language for me. But I knew I had surrendered. I knew that word. And I wish today that I could bottle surrender. I wish I could give it to people so much, but I can't, because that's between you and God. But I wish I could. The only thing that I can't give is surrender. And so I had surrendered. And so when they told me I had to get a sponsor, they gave me a week to get a sponsor. So on the seventh day, you know, we would go downstairs to this meeting, and that's where I met my sponsor. And I have I went up to her and I asked her to be my sponsor, and I ran away right after. I didn't even wait for the answer because I didn't know anything about rejection, but that's what I was feeling. Oh, my God, I don't want to be rejected. So she comes up to me and she hands me a piece of paper and she goes, this is my number and I want you to use it. I mean, she looked right at me in the eyes. And I knew that's what she meant. And I do that today. I'm not just giving you my number just for the heck of it. I'm giving it because I want to help save your life. Your life can change. you know. So she became my sponsor, and I would like to tell y'all, and it is true, I still have the same sponsor I've had for over 19 years. And it hasn't been easy. No, you know, it's been simple, but it's not easy. And what happened to me when I got out of treatment is my sponsor opened up her house to me. Think about that. This woman who I didn't think knew anything about me, but yet she knew everything. This woman who didn't know me from Adam opened her up her house to me. And I lived with this woman for a year, and I am so, so grateful today, because if you would have asked me if I was grateful then, I didn't even know what the word was. I didn't have a grateful bone in my body. It was all about me. So I lived with my sponsor for a year, and this is what happened to me, for me, with me, is my sponsor sat there, and she didn't wait for me to have a drink. She thought that doing the steps was a good idea. And what, she didn't wait for me to want a drink or to want to pick up a drink. She got me started in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. She got me in that circle. She got me into the unity, into the recovery, and into the service. And see, I didn't have to understand anything that was happening to me. I just had to do it. And what I did is I grabbed onto her shirt tail, and I just did what she told me to do. You know, and I'm not saying that I was a great volunteer with it at all times, because I was a whiner. You know, I'm Jewish, I whine. You know, and I thought I deserved more. But I did, I cried a lot. I cried a lot. And what we did is she sat me down, and we opened up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we did everything that book said to do. And what if it said to pray, we prayed. If it said write, we wrote. You know, whatever instructions that book said to do, we did. Now, I'm telling you, I didn't know what I was doing, but I didn't need to know. And I see people today, you need to understand. No, you don't. I'm here to tell you. You don't need to have it in your left pocket. You just need to do. You know, I'm a doer today. I am a doer. But what my sponsor did for me is, because another reason why she read to me is I was incapable of reading, because my reading skills had evaporated. I don't know where they went, but I couldn't. Well, I wonder where they went. Yeah. But she didn't care about me, you know. I didn't. Everything that I had, it was just on my back. I just had a couple of shirts and a pair of jeans, and so I felt like I couldn't get a job because of that. And she didn't care about how I thought or felt, you know. And I said, yeah, but I look so terrible, you know. I look terrible. And she goes, good, get a terrible job, but you're going to get a job, you know. And so I started working at a pretzel place selling pretzels for $3.45 an hour. And how humbling was that for me? It was just so humbling. But I did it. You know, I did it. And the next job I had, I was selling hot dogs at a golf course. You know, I wanted to be playing golf. I didn't want to be selling hot dogs. But see, my sponsor made me become responsible. So when we were sitting down and doing the steps, you know, certain things came along, like God. God came up in the conversation. And my sponsor told me that the most important relationship that I'm ever going to get is the relationship I get with God. And see, that was hard for me because I didn't have one at all. Neither good nor bad, but I didn't have one. And so I started having to practice. And that's the key word here. If you want something to happen in your life, we practice. You know, you can't just be a great pianist if you never do that. So if I wanted to be a child of God, I had to start practicing and acting like I was one. And see, that was hard for me because I felt so bad about myself. I mean, I was like so bad. You know, I did so many rotten things. You know, my family hates me. You know, everything was a whiner, like I said. But she would remind me what it said in chapter 4. Sammy, God either is or he isn't. What is your choice to be? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot. You know, I would come home, I'd be frantic about anything. And she goes, didn't we say that God was going to take care of that? Yeah, yep, we did. You know, I agree, we did. but I was always taking it back. Because, see, I knew that it was a process. And, see, I wanted what you had. I really wanted what you had. I wanted that God in me so bad, but it was only right here. And I had to practice and act as if and have that blind faith. You know, the big book talks about it so freely that we have to come to believe first. And see, I thought I had to have the faith first. And see, I didn't. I just had to have the willingness of a mustard seed. The mustard seed is the smallest seed that we have. And if I just had the willingness of that mustard seed, because that mustard seed grows the largest tree. So all I had to have is the willingness of a mustard seed. And I could understand things like that. I thought they were cool. Like, I can do that, you know. So I started practicing this God in my life. And when it got to my fourth step, you know, I didn't want to see really the truth about me. Because, you know, I came in thinking I was the worst. I did things that none of y'all could have possibly done. You know, but I've done a lot of fifth steps. I'm telling y'all you have. But when I got here, I just thought I was the worst human being. And but when I did my first four step, I will tell you a funny story. I did my first four step with a rabbi, because the big book says you can. I chose this rabbi, I didn't even know him. I called him up, I said, save me a lot of time because I'm important, and I'm going to do this this four step. I don't know where I got this idea. Maybe I think today I thought that if my family knew what I was doing, they'd approve of me. So I go and I talk to this rabbi, and I'm there for 5 minutes, and I'm crying, you know, snot coming out everywhere, you know, very dramatic. And he stopped me and he said, are you sure your parents are Jewish? I was like, oh my God, I may be in the wrong place. So then I proceeded, because I'm still important, and 5 minutes passed, and he goes, how much money do you think you spent? So at that point, I just put my tail between my legs and just went back to my sponsor. And it taught me a good lesson. It really did, because it is very important we go to someone who's very understanding in what we're about to do, because this is a matter of my life and death. It really is. So I do my four step, and, you know, I'm the type, I just didn't want to see that I was sarcastic, that I was careless, that I was resentful, that I was inconsiderate. You know, all my life, and I mean this with bottom of my heart, all my life I wanted to be a kind person. I really wanted to be considerate, and I didn't know how to do that. I just didn't know how to do that. And she promised me that if I did certain things in this program, that God was going to give me those things. You know, and she would say, you already have them. You just need to tap into it, because it's already there. See, God is deep and down inside every one of us. The big book says that deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And it is covered up by pomp, by worship of other things. But it is there. And see, when I was doing my four step, and she explained this to me, that it wasn't that I was going to get God. God was already there. And I had to just let him out. And I had to let him out by uncovering and discovering and discarding all those things that was blocking me off from the sunlight of the Spirit. And that's what I wanted so bad. I wanted what you people had. You know, I wanted to stop lying. I just wanted to be honest so bad. But I had the willingness. I did have that. And so I took a good look at myself, and I just didn't think it was a pretty sight whatsoever. And I know it wasn't set up there, and it wasn't set up to make me to feel good and all that stuff, but I wanted those things. And so I was willing to do that. And, you know, I used to think for a long time that I could fix these things, that, you know, I can make those changes. So, okay, I'm resentful. I can do that. I can do something about it. And I found out that it's God's job. It's God's job. I'm the one, and 6 and 7 are supposed to give it to him. And he's going to take care of me. And see, I believe that with all my heart today. You know, when it got to 8 and 9, I had to make amends. And I was only 3 months sober when I was doing all this. And I had to make amends to my family. I didn't want to do that. You know, screw them. Look what they did to me. They disowned me. You know, they killed me. How could they do that to me? I had so much hate and unforgiveness in my heart. It was just there. And so she told me that I had to do it anyway. I would try to call them up and they would hang up. So what she said is you can write a letter to them. And I wrote letters to them, and I had that expectation that the red carpet was going to be out and I was going to be the prodigal daughter and, you know, the sky would shine. But it didn't happen that way. You know, I didn't hear anything back, and it killed me. God, it killed me. So she said, and it says this in the big book. I used to think she was so profound, you know, it's right in the big book. You know, she didn't say when I was crying and feeling all that weight, she goes, oh, don't feel what you're feeling. Stop that right now. You know, you don't need to be doing that. She said, I want you to set aside everything that you think and feel, all your ideas and all your emotions, and set them aside. She didn't tell me to throw them away or stop feeling it, because she knew that's impossible. She told me to set them aside long enough for a new set of conceptions, for God to flow into me so I can become a sober person. And so I did. I kept setting these things aside, setting aside. But she made me write my mother. And so I was writing my mother on a weekly basis, and after 2 years, my mom wrote me back. And it had been years. And she told me at that first letter that she couldn't see me. See, the family didn't want her to have any part of me. And so, but I kept writing her, and then finally my mom called me and agreed to see me. And my mom and I today have a great relationship, the best that I can have with her. She's 90 years old, and I talk to my mom at least 3-4 times a week. And it wasn't an easy road. It was simple, but not easy. And what I did, and after 15 years, my oldest brother called me. After 15 years of sobriety, and he said to me, Sammy, out of the blue, I pick up the phone. And he goes, Sammy, I think it's about time that we talked and got together. And I'm like, okay. Now, where did that come from? You know, years ago, I would have gone, what? Are you kidding? Look what you've done to me. Never will I do that. Forget you. But what came out of my mouth and out of my heart was okay. See, I always thought it was in their court, my family's court. You know, it was always up to them. And I didn't know, but I know today it was in God's time. God healed my heart. He healed me. I had forgiveness in my heart, and I don't know where it came from. Did it come from the steps? Did it come from my sponsor? Did it come from God? Is it because I go to prison and do prison work? How did that happen for someone like me, who wasn't anything like that? So my brother and I met, and I say I met him for the first time because I had so much fear. As a child, I didn't even know him. I didn't know who he was. I was just in the fear. So that happened. Now, I'd like to say that my other sisters and brothers have come around or has found forgiveness, but that's not true. In September of last year, I was invited to a family function for the first time in 25 years. I have nieces and nephews I've never met. I mean, I was, you know, when I got that invitation, I was like, you know, of course the first thought, I was like, what am I going to wear? You know, and I remember I was being really scared and doing all that, and an old-timer came up to me, and bless old-timers. And they went, whoa, 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 Sammy. Whoa. He said, all you have to do is suit up and show up. God's already taken care of it for you. And I was okay from that point on. You know, it's funny, I go down there, and what was so great about that, because it turned out to be awesome. You know, I walk into that room, but guess who I had with me? I had you people with me. I had the principles that this program has so freely given me, that I have been practicing and practicing until they become automatic. They automatically happen for me today. But that's what I took with me. And I could walk with my head up. You know? I could show Alcoholics Anonymous. I could be what God wanted me to be. And it was such a great feeling. Did my sisters and brothers come up to me and talk to me? No. You know? But I was okay. I didn't have to beg. I didn't have to do anything like that. I was calm. I was comfortable in my own skin. I've always wanted that. Always. You know, so that was a great day. That just happened to me. You know, my life has changed so much, and it's changed without me even having any, with my permission. You know, all I did was suit up and show up. You know, I told you all I never had an ambition in my life except for to be happy. Well, I have a purpose today, and my purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And achieve is a past tense. Because I have recovered from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I'm not hopeless or helpless today. I was. But see, God has entered my heart, and He's lit that light back up in me. And I can be able to give it to other people, to sponsees, to women who need help too, and light their light. Because God gave it to me, gave it to my sponsor, gives it to me. We just keep passing that on. You know, and I don't know what it is that really has done this, but I know I don't want to stop doing what I'm doing. You know, I don't know what meeting it is that I can miss. You know, I don't know if it's, I've been going to prison for 18 years. I love it, you know. But my life, my spirit has been awakened. You know, that 12-step promise, as the result of these steps, why would you not choose that, even though it is a hard decision, a spiritual life or death? Huh. Is there a C, you know? Because... is there another one? But see, at that point, I was there. I was ready. And it's a journey. It's not an event. I had to get on this journey. And I was fortunate to have a sponsor who cared enough about me that I can turn around and love you. But what I will tell you, working with others has been a passion for me. You know, and I'm very fortunate because I've never had a purpose in life. I've never had a conviction. I've never had anything like that. And today, I love being of service to other women. I love it. It fills so much inside of me, you know. And besides, I've learned everything I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous through sponsorship. Me sponsoring you has given me my life back. And see, I never would have known that before. You know, we all, you know, at the beginning, oh yeah, I want around 20 sponsees so I can look like I'm really the top, you know, woohoo, you know. But with sponsees, I have made every mistake. If the big book said to do this, I didn't do it. If the big book said don't do that, I did it. I have made every mistake, but I have stayed sober. The good news is I'm not a mistake today. See, every time I made a mistake, I moved to another city. You know, I can move to another room today, but I can pass on what was so freely given to me. My heart is filled with gratitude. My heart is filled with thankfulness. I'm very thankful today that I have this life that I have today, something I didn't even deserve. And thank you so much for having me share tonight.